I'm your host, Sally Felton. If you're feeling stuck, overwhelmed, or feeling out of balance, keep listening. This show is for you. I call it a fresh start because we help by giving you tips, tools, and resources to empower yourself to make positive changes in your life one step at a time. In today's hour, I'll be talking to Paul Helfrich, who's going to shed more clarity on the four main areas of this new map of reality. What am I talking about? I don't have a clue, but it's all about the Seth material. And I'm full of curiosity today because I'm going to learn what this is and how I can apply it in my life so you can apply it to your life. What is this emerging new world view, and how does it affect us? As he says, the secret is great, but this delves even deeper. I want to tell you a little story. I believe strongly that we create our own reality. Even by not choosing, we are still making a choice. Believe it or not, not to choose is still choosing. You are still making that choice. A lot of people don't hear that, and I want to make that really clear. So why is it that some people are adept at creating better results while others aren't? Something must be missing. Like car, out of alignment, there's an unbalance. With Paul Helfrich, he's going to shed more light on the Seth material. Some of you may know what that is. Others aren't. I'm not even going to tell you what it is because I want this expert to do just that. So what we're going to do is unlock and explore the secrets of the Seth material. To me, it sounds like opening up Pandora's box. What will we discover about ourselves? Paul, I thank you for being my guest today. My curiosity is killing me.
Hi, Sally. Thank you for having me.
What is Seth material?
The Seth material is the name of a body of work written by a woman named Jane Roberts, who lived from 1929 to 1984, and she lived in Elmira, New York, with her husband, Robert Butts. She didn't have any children, and she was what we would generally call a psychic, and she explored what was called ESP in the 60s, and during her explorations, she got a Ouija board and started playing with that, and one day, the Ouija board started moving, the planchette started moving on its own, and this personality that called itself Seth announced itself, and a relationship that lasted from 1963 to her death in 1984, 21 years, resulted. During that period, Jane wrote 46 books that are now available. At the time of her death in 1984, perhaps only half were published at that time. So we're in a wonderful place today where we can look at the entire body of work for the very first time and go through it. And it's something I've been studying for over 35 years. 30 of those.
I know.
Oh, go ahead.
I know when I grew up in the 60s, 70s, we played with the Ouija board, and some people would say, oh, you're just moving it. I'm watching. You're just moving it, or you're wanting to say things, spell things out, because you know that's what I want to hear. How do you explain the Seth material to skeptics? Because I know they're, you know, part of my audience, yeah, there are some out there that are going to say, really? Are you kidding me? How would you explain it to them?
Well, the Ouija board itself, how that's working is through muscle movement. And there's something that's well known in paranormal studies called automatic writing, where a person goes into a slightly altered state or a deeply altered state, as was the case with Jane Roberts, and other information, and even, as in Jane's case, other personalities are able to come through. So we're looking at a map of consciousness, as you mentioned, that is much deeper than the conventional religious map of consciousness and the conventional psychological sciences of today as well. So we have to be willing to explore something deeper within the human psyche, human consciousness, that allows for this kind of automatic muscle movement. There's things called muscle testing and other divination methods of using rods for water, finding water and things like that. That's based on muscle movement and automatic muscle movement. Now, what this assumes, I don't want to use the word assume, in my view, what this includes is a very deep part of the person's psyche that is coming through and moving the planchette on the Ouija board or the dowsing rods to indicate where water is and so on and so forth. I'll leave it there for now.
You talk about a deep part of a person's psyche. Do all of us have that? And if we do, how do we access it? And if we are not, if it has not, what is the word I want? If it does, if we have not grown it or nurtured it, how does one do that?
Well, the way I teach it is to use an analogy of an iceberg, and that the tip of the iceberg is that part of us that we're very familiar with, that we give our name Paul and Sally to, and lives in the physical world and has a waking state and a dreaming state and goes through a cycle every 24 hours of dreaming and deep dreaming states. Now, the submerged part of this iceberg, according to the map presented by Seth, and we are still unpacking this map. This material was finished being delivered in 1984, so it's only been several decades that it's been available, and again, in its fullness right now. So if we go with this analogy of the iceberg self, we're just imagining, using our imagination for a moment, that this submerged part is really, really, really vast. And, you know, it's what's conventionally called the soul. People have a natural intuition of soul or spirit, and whether they believe in that or not is personal and up to them. And the way you begin to work with this part of yourself, this submerged or hidden part, according to Seth, there's different paths, of course, but Seth emphasized the dream state and learning to recall our dreams, learning to journal our dreams, and make the subconscious, which the dreaming self is part of, more conscious. And that is the gateway, the portal, so to speak, the wormhole into the deep depths of the soul, or the submerged part of the iceberg self. So working with dreams is how we start.
Okay. If we work with dreams, what's one of the first steps we do?
Well, one of the first steps is remembering our dreams. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't even recall their dreams at night, much less in the morning time. So the very first step is telling yourself that your dreams are important to you, that they contain important messages, and that you want to remember them. And the next step is to commit to a dream journal. And Seth was very big on this, and he worked with Rob and Jane early on, having them work with their dreams, analyze their dreams, remember their dreams. And just a sideways comment, too, it's not just the dream state, but that is something that we do every day. So that's a great beginning place. But we're also talking about the channeling phenomenon, which is something we haven't talked about yet, which is, we'll just call an altered state. It's like a waking dream state where Jane would step aside and this full-blown personality called Seth comes through. And so what we'll just call altered states, including dreaming, is really the gateway to this iceberg self.
It's interesting you talk about committing to a dream journal. when I was being trained with visualization and imagery and going into your dream state, so to speak, and speaking to different parts of your chakra area, again, we would literally have ourselves each morning write down what it was that we saw, we felt, tasted, we smelled throughout our dreams. And when this was done, we would dismiss it, but then we could also recall and bring up that dream once again, Paul, and then continue almost having a discussion with that other part of ourselves. It was fascinating.
Yes, and that sounds like a type of gestalt approach therapy of objectifying the subjective. And Seth includes exercises for that. And I also want to mention that you use the term chakra, and I'm assuming that many people in the audience listening today have a sense of what that is, these subtle energy bodies. And Seth never used the term chakra, interestingly enough, but he used a term called inner senses. And he detailed 9 of them. No need to go into those right now. But it's basically the modality, the native perception of the submerged part of the iceberg self, or the inner self, or the soul. And so the soul uses these inner senses, but the outer self, the waking self, the tip of the iceberg self, has to learn to engage these inner senses. And so the work that you were doing in your training is starting to turn on the switch and light up the inner senses. So this is a next part of the beginning practices that Seth presented, and he presented them early on in his work with Jane and Rob. He introduced them and he gave them exercises. And the key one of those 9 is called psychological time, or what we just abbreviate as psi time. And then psi time is basically the same sort of mental state in which you engage sitting meditation in all of the world's religious and spiritual traditions. So this is another modality that is used to open the waking self to the deep, deep subconscious and even further inward self.
So we're basically talking about something that everybody knows about. How, they know the word meditation. So you're
That's right.
using a different word that may be a little foreign to some individuals, but again, it is using another terminology. We are still talking about meditation here. And when somebody goes into meditation, they go into a type of altered mental state. But you're still safe. You're still fine. You're okay. And a lot of people who may be listening might say, what is this, Seth? Who is this voice? What is this an alien? Is it another being? I think what we're talking about is not so new. It's just said in a different way, Paul.
That's
or presented
exactly,
in a different way.
That's exactly right, Sally, that in a larger historical perspective, in terms of human evolution, if we look back thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, the submerged part of the iceberg self is always attempting to translate into the terms of the local culture the map of consciousness and practices for using it. And we have shamanic traditions and so on when you look in sociological and anthropological research. So, again, just one more point on the inner senses. The way that Seth ties this together, it's very smooth, because we look at our what are called our 5 physical senses that the material sciences are firmly based upon, but they ignore these inner senses. And so you have the 5 physical senses, and then what we'll just call the mental senses of the intellect, our cognitive ability, what Piaget and people like that map and developmental psychologists have studied for over 100 years now in the West. So you have physical, mental, and then inner senses. This is a spectrum of perception that allows us to embrace and start to explore our full iceberg self. And that takes time, of course, to understand and to practice and to do properly.
Are there more, than one inner senses? You say senses, so there has to be more than one. What are they?
Seth gives nine. And rather than, it's very technical, but I group them into three groups of three, which makes it easy to understand at the beginning. So the first group of inner senses deals with empathic senses or empathy. It's basically the ability to walk a mile in another's shoes, but literally to do that. Jane had documented stories where she projected her consciousness inside of a nail or inside of a fly and briefly merged with those consciousnesses and experienced her flyness and her nailness through these inner senses. And the second group are conceptual inner senses, where we conceptualize. It's the basic inner knowledge of the workings of the universe, of how things are designed, the laws of the inner and outer universes. We intuit or discover through these conceptual inner senses. And then the third area are the time-based senses, because we're looking at what Seth calls, at least for the submerged part of the iceberg, he calls it simultaneous time or a spacious present, in which all of our lifetimes, I'm jumping into reincarnation right now, are perceivable by the inner self or the soul. And this, again, is made possible through these chakras or inner senses. And that's the bridge into the physical self to begin to experiment and perceive and use that information.
When we first started this interview, we talked about choosing your reality. And when we get back, or you choose your reality the way you want it to be, for some it's easier than others. I want to get back to that because I think it's so important that we all know we have this choice. We have a choice here. We may be influenced by our environment, our job, our families, whatever it is that we may be stuck in, Paul, but ostensibly we can control this through choice. And what I'd like to talk about in the next segment is how the Seth material could help us in learning to choose better. This is Sally Felton. We'll be right back.
Are you a small business owner? Have you felt like you're juggling, trying to keep all the balls in the air at once? Unorganized, overworked, stretched, lost that motivation? Well, there's a solution, and it can be as easy as having someone in your arena to support you as you redefine and strategize your vision. See how others have found having a coach moves their small businesses forward in a more productive and positive direction. The consultation is free. Contact Sally Felton at 978-626-0090 or on the web at sallyfeltonlifecoach.com. And let's get you started. What would it feel like to see your business grow?
Do you eat 7 to 13 fruits and vegetables every day? That's what the American Cancer Society tells us we should be eating. The problem is we either can't or won't. Juice Plus is not a vitamin supplement. It is whole food-based nutrition from 17 different fruits, vegetables, and grains. Juice Plus is based in science by third-party, primary, independent clinical research and published in peer-reviewed journals. The clinical research shows that it raises levels of antioxidants in the blood, enhances immune function, reduces DNA damage, and improves cardiovascular health. Juice Plus, the next best thing to fruits and vegetables. To order, call 617-688-3826. That's 617-688-3826. Or on the web at www.cknowltonjuiceplus.com. That's www.cknowltonjuiceplus.com.
Welcome back, Sally Felton with a fresh start. This is a pretty heady conversation interview we're having this week. And my guest is Paul Helrich, and he has been very much a part of the Seth material and lectures, talks about it, and has even, you have a new book coming out, don't you?
Well, it's pending publication.
Pending publication. Yep, it's pending publication. And I want to give people, my listeners, your website. It's www.paulhelrich, and that's spelled H as in Harry, ELFRICH.com. Paul Helrich, and that's a CH at the end, .com. Before the break, I said I wanted to loop back, Paul, and talk about reality. People have choices. We have choices even when our environment, family, friends, job is not the way we wished it were, but we still have conscious choices. We get stuck in this belief area, and as you said during our break, this is a huge football field in which we run around. It's huge, and we trip up so many times because of what we believe. How can we start today to make better choices in our reality?
Well, earlier we talked about meditation and psi-time, which is basically an introspective practice where you're observing yourself. And so taking that and applying it into the area of our beliefs and belief systems, our emotions and feelings and our choices, we can begin to make conscious some of the things that are more automatic. And the automatic things, when we run on automatic, that's oftentimes where we get into problems. And we know from developmental psychology, there's healthy development and there's pathological development as well. So our belief system...
Tell me the two. Explain those two.
Well,
healthy and unhealthy.
And how you define that, of course, is open to debate. But to me, someone who's healthy is fully functional, has decent hygiene, knows what time of day it is, and is pursuing, you know, their life intent, and that they're happy. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. they're healthy and they're happy. They don't have too many symptoms. You know, and again, there's gray areas here. And the pathological side then is just look at the news on any given day. The violence, the dysfunction, addiction, all of those things mm-hmm. are symptoms of pathological beliefs that keep us from developing our abilities to the fullest. This is another thing that Seth challenges us to do, that we are here, we have a purpose, there is a purpose to life, and that is to develop our abilities to their fullest. And when we're not, when we get off track from that, that's when these dysfunctional and pathological behaviors can result. And when we do the work, the introspective work with them, we come back to belief systems. And Seth talked about what he called core belief systems. And this was an interesting way of organizing it for the general public. The Seth material is a grassroots phenomenon. It's not from academia. It's not from a corporation that's highly polished and highly tuned to the marketplace. So it's meant to reach a very large audience. So there, he really talks in general terms, and with belief systems, he has something he calls core belief systems. And so, and there's core beliefs within the belief system. And the analogy I like to use is just a solar system. If the sun is the psyche or your conscious mind, the planets that are orbiting are the core belief systems. And just to name a few, in terms of a system, the belief system of emotions, the belief system of relationships, the belief system of how the world was made and the physics and science and all of that. So there are systems that overlap with each other. And within them, then, are core beliefs. And coming to understand and make conscious a core belief is a psychological way of healing a particular psychological problem that leads to making the choices that can improve our life.
Give me an example of that.
Oh, geez.
Caught you off guard.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a dysfunctional. I mean, you probably can give a better example than I can with some of your experiences as a therapist, where someone, what you're choosing and doing. Well, okay, let me just give an example of a food addiction. Someone who perhaps has issues with wanting to protect themselves from the world and having relationship issues, and so when relationships tend to go south or there's a breakup or something like that, they tend to eat. Some people overeat, some people restrict and don't eat. And so, you know, you can gain weight and then you build up a body that's 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight as a defense mechanism against the outside world. But if you understand that and you change and you identify that core belief system that you're using food as a defense mechanism to keep yourself from being hurt by people because it keeps you, you know, puts up a barrier perhaps, and you want to change that, you change that belief, you change your diet and exercise habits, and you see this all the time with people who lose large amounts of weight, and that is a belief system being changed right there, a change of habit. And the same applies for addictions, drug addiction, sex addiction, gambling addiction, internet addiction, and so on and so forth. These are belief systems at work, and it's a craving for pleasure and experience, but it's out of balance, and you get on a hamster wheel that it's never enough, never enough, never enough. And so identifying the beliefs involved with that, it can make things just change altogether. So once you realize, oh my God, I have back to the example of food, oh my God, I've put on 30 pounds because I'm hurt and I just don't want to deal with the other gender or, you know, other people right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, but I'm ready to do that. You know, I'm not happy in this state. And you identify that belief, all of a sudden your diet changes, your exercise changes, and your body changes. And these are all choices that you're making in the moment. And Seth calls that the point of power. The present is the point of power, is a key Sethian exercise. And it's been so helpful to me over the years. It's from simple things like, oh, I haven't returned that phone call. You know, return the phone call. You feel better. 2 days goes by, it's lingering in the back of your mind. It gets bigger and bigger that you're not acting on it. So taking action in the now, in the moment, is a key outcome of these Sethian exercises that he provides.
What is similar to the Sethian outcomes? Is there other teachings that my listeners could resonate with? Because again, this is not new material.
Right. Right. When we step up a layer and look at the anthropology of the Seth material and where it is in history, yes, it's a unique body of work. There are, and in fact, Jane Roberts' work opened the doors for other channelers to go public and make a business out of channeling. And perfect examples are J.Z. Knight and Ramtha in Yelm, Washington, United States, the Hickses, Jerry and Esther Hicks, and Abraham, and Daryl Anka, Bashar, Cryon. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of others that are out there on the internet if you look up channeling. And the message of you create your own reality, that there's a major shift in consciousness, that human personality survives death, that reincarnation has merit, that there's something about that that is true, and on are common elements in all of these teachings. On the surface level, however, they all have different languages, different terms, different intents as they come. Some have a more teaching intent, some have a more healing intent, some have a more artistic and creative intent, some are more revolutionary and just like to stir the pot. So there's different styles to these teachings, and our personalities align.
What's Seth's intent?
Seth's intent, as he described it, was what we would generally call an artistic intent. And he's a pot stirrer. So he comes in to change the status quo through art and creativity. And Jane and Rob are led perfect exemplary lives of great creative output. Again, they had no children, so their work was and art were their children, essentially, and their readers who've embraced the material, in a sense, are their spiritual children, so to speak. So Jane was a writer. Rob was a painter. They loved to dance. They loved music. So there was great creativity involved in their physical lives. And Seth, from the soul level, we'll just leave it at that for now, at the soul level in the submerged part of the iceberg self, it also has intention. It is a meaningful and purposeful universe, which is something that mainstream science, particularly the evolutionists, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, people of that ilk, you know, are basically promoting a random chance creation story of the Big Bang, and there's no need for the submerged part of the iceberg since we can't see that with our physical senses, and so on and so forth. But that leads to a real pathological malaise from a social level, because it's a meaningless, random universe. Life was created in a puddle of amino acids and a lightning bolt, or something like that. And Seth jokingly refers to that as the great chance encounter. And he says it's bunk. It's not true, but there's a much larger and deeper story involved there.
Of which we're not going to get in the next 25 minutes. You talk about your place in the world. You talk about the physical and the non-physical domains of reality.
Yes.
Talk
and this,
more about that.
This is a way.
What's the order of play?
Seth presented a map of physical reality. He presented a map of the self, and which I won't use the technical term for that. But he presented a I'm getting off track here. A map of the physical layers of reality. So he referred to the tip of the iceberg self as framework one, and he referred to the submerged parts as frameworks 2, 3, and 4. And so he started to provide a map that you can explore with these altered states yourself. And he showed how he focused heavily on framework 2, which is the closest to framework 1. It's that level of non-physical reality that is it's just about to become physical or express itself and translate its energy into the physical domain and appear as physical reality. Because remember, the iceberg self straddles all of these. Your iceberg self is in frameworks 1, 2, 3, and 4. So framework 2, and the work on that, you'll find in the book called The Individual and the Nature of Mass Events. And this is a key thing. It's really part of Seth's version of The Secret, he's detailing the physics and metaphysics of reality creation there. So framework 2 is a great source realm of potential, infinitely potential probabilities that the physical self, through its belief systems, chooses to make physical. So the native source energy exists in this framework 2, and our dreaming self is a bridge into framework 2 as well. And it's a transition area into the after-death environment, but we won't go into that today. But so framework 2 and learning to work with framework 2 and the belief systems is very important.
Is this whole Seth material being embraced by the science establishment?
No. And that's because the model for the human psychology doesn't exist in terms of mainstream schools and lineages there, tracing back its roots back to the depth schools of Freud and Jung. But we got into the, you know, if we look at the transpersonal schools coming out of the late 60s and 70s, and then the integral psychology of Ken Wilber, it is in the work of Ken Wilber that I discovered a map that allows the Seth material to take its appropriate place, to situate it and situate the different parts of it in Wilber's map of integral psychology. It fits very, very well there. However, Wilber's work is not in the academy. It's penetrating a little bit. It's only 30 years old, and it's not mainstream by any chance. But at this time in 2011, but I strongly believe in the next few decades, this is the kind of thing that allows us to, as I said, situate the Seth material, and then you have to falsify or verify it yourself in the laboratory of your own experience. But in terms of science, to take it to the scientific level, we have to do that in a community of peers, peers who are adequate to using their inner senses, because there are so few psychics, let's just use that term again right now, psychics slash scientists.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the fringes of the academy. There are transpersonal and paranormal, there's different labels in the academy of researchers who've done that. John Klimo, Arthur Hastings, Michael Brown have studied channeling. There's books out there. There's a lot of very good information, but it's far from mainstream. And I worked at the Franklin Institute Science Museum for 10 years, and we got funded by the National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, National Institutes of Mental Health. Those governmental funding agencies provide $0 for research in this area right now because they don't see a practical application of it. So until we can make a case for its practical application, particularly in terms of right now therapy and healing for people, then funding will become available. There are scientific protocols that have been developed and are in the process of evolving right now, again, based on Ken Wilber's work, that we can use and apply to the channeling phenomena to test it and understand what it is. And while I'm in that area, I believe it to be what's called a multiple intelligence, which is very generally we have a mathematical intelligence, a linguistic intelligence, a musical intelligence. And this is work that's been done at Harvard over the last 35 years and earlier. So I believe that channeling itself is one of these modalities. It's a type of dissociative intelligence or hyper creativity that we can use for problem solving. And once we learn to develop it and school it and see how it develops in stages, just like the other, these, our linguistic ability develops in stages, our mathematical and so on, these all develop in stages. And from what I can observe of channeling with Jane Roberts and other channelers that I've studied, there seems to be a general stage model that we can apply. So there is an entree, but there has to be the will and, of course, funding to do that. And that just doesn't exist right now.
But I bet it does. I bet it will. I mean, look at the way we have come with alternative healings, Eastern medicine, all of that. It's finally become something that even a lot of primary care physicians will talk about. You know, there's the blending of the East and the West. I think we have a lot more to learn about what our own capabilities are. We haven't even made a dent in the armor here. Not a dent. There is so much more to know about our brain and our inner soul that we just haven't even touched.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
You've just outlined the emerging new worldview, what I am defining as the emerging new worldview. It is the worldview that is blending, bridging science and spirit, East and West, the best practices, so that there's no longer a separation, that we understand the spectrum of physical, mental, inner senses, submerged part of the iceberg, physical parts of the iceberg, and we can explore them willfully. So I believe this is what the coming centuries are all about, and it's very, very exciting to be on the cusp of this.
Yeah, it is. It is. We have to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Paul Ulrich about how we can live in harmony with all of this. Again, now we've chosen our reality. How are we going to blend all of it? We'll be right back. This is Sally Felton with A Fresh Start.
Do you eat 7 to 13 fruits and vegetables every day? That's what the American Cancer Society tells us we should be eating. The problem is we either can't or won't. Juice Plus is not a vitamin supplement. It is whole food-based nutrition from 17 different fruits, vegetables, and grains. Juice Plus is based in science by third-party, primary, independent clinical research and published in peer-reviewed journals. The clinical research shows that it raises levels of antioxidants in the blood, enhances immune function, reduces DNA damage, and improves cardiovascular health. Juice Plus, the next best thing to fruits and vegetables. To order, call 617-688-3826. That's 617-688-3826. Or on the web at www.cknowltonjuiceplus.com. That's www.cknowltonjuiceplus.com.
Are you a small business owner? Have you felt like you're juggling, trying to keep all the balls in the air at once? Unorganized, overworked, stretched, lost that motivation? Well, there's a solution, and it can be as easy as having someone in your arena to support you as you redefine and strategize your vision. See how others have found having a coach moves their small businesses forward in a more productive and positive direction. The consultation is free. Contact Sally Felton at 978-626-0090 or on the web at sallyfeltonlifecoach.com. And let's get you started. What would it feel like to see your business grow?
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Welcome back, Sally Felton with A Fresh Start. My guest today is Paul Ulrich, and he is an author with a book that is pending publication, but he's talking about today the Seth material. And for some of you that may have just joined us, I asked him during the break, how old is Seth? And the response that Paul gave me was, he is ageless. He has completed lifetimes, and he is an excellent, excellent teacher. Did I get that all just about right, Paul?
Yes. Yes, you did. Seth said that he is beyond gender because that deep layer of the iceberg self is the source of all male and female gender, and also beyond space and time. And again, I mentioned the concept of simultaneous time and a spacious present, which is beyond our physical comprehension, and yet this is being revealed to us that this is how this layer works. And so I believe it's important to at least update our maps of consciousness with those ideas, because we're going to start penetrating physically, as physically focused individuals in the coming centuries, decades perhaps, and centuries into those layers of self. And in fact, people like Jane Roberts have been doing so, and Edgar Cayce going back into the early 20th century, and Madame Blavatsky, theosophy at the turn of the late 19th and 20th century.
Question for you. How can we live in harmony? How can we, again, avoid war? How can we avoid violence? How can we create a world with incurable diseases, birth defects, and other handicaps? I mean, this is a world that we're living in. How do we heal that? How do we live in harmony?
Seth talks about this area that, again, every choice that's made by each individual is meaningful and has purpose, and that we as a civilization have chosen a path, an evolutionary path, to explore a particular style or type of consciousness. And in the last 400 to 500 years of the modern era, the intellectual capacities have grown so strong. The trade-off there has been that we have separated from our souls or our soul self so deeply that many people don't even believe they have a soul anymore. Many people don't even remember their dreams or consider their dreams to be important. So this sense of separation is part of the story here in terms of how we get along. And Seth, in The Nature of Personal Reality, his bestseller and the classic book, talked about the concept of violation. And it's something that's an innate moral intuition. And what's different, what differentiates human beings from animals, for instance, since animal consciousness is so similar and was necessary for human consciousness to emerge from that, he explains how in animal consciousness, it's instinct, it's hardwired to create a biosphere, a healthy biosphere of plants and animals that can sustain itself. And out of that emerges human consciousness at some point. So as human evolution manifests human beings, this sense of violation became a choice. And what it was to say we had a memory, and we could look back and say, when I killed that animal and did not eat all of its flesh and use its skin and bones and sinew for my clothing and weapons and housing, that was wrong. I have an innate knowing that that was wrong. And he calls that a sense of violation, and its intent was to help us avoid a repetition of that. So you know you're wasting. You don't kill more than you need. But killing is a natural part of our experience in that point of evolution. Now, fast forward to today in the industrial and post-industrial information age, the complexity of human experience is mind-boggling today, and so our sense of violation has shifted. And to tie it into this sense of separation, of not remembering our spiritual roots, the sense of violation gets overridden, and so wars occur. The fact, if you understood that when you kill somebody, you're killing yourself, and furthermore that you can't destroy them ever. You're destroying their body, their physical body, but their soul continues. Mm-hmm. Wars would minimize or cease altogether. And we're at a critical stage of mass probabilities of choosing to either continue down this very materialist, separated state of consciousness that is self-destructive and could kill itself, or to open up to the inner senses and our spiritual heritage to bring that back in, but with the benefit of these wonderful sciences and intellectual, artistic achievements that we have to take our civilization to completely new levels. And Seth gave an example also of an ancient race that he called Lumanians. Now, this is not to be confused with the theosophical Lemurians, or Lemuria, which is part of that storytelling. But he said there were three ancient civilizations, and he gave a bit of information on the second one, and that they experimented with nonviolence. But it went to such extremes that they couldn't defend themselves, their bodies became weak, and their civilization, while it achieved a high artistic and scientific achievement, because the violence, as soon as there was violence, they would faint almost, or just run away. They couldn't be violent. It got out of control that way. So there's just these endless possibilities that we're exploring. So back to your original statement at this part of the show of the nature of wars, that's a symptom of our mass separation from our source self, and learning to be more in tune with that is part of awakening to that, and minimizing violence as a solution to those kinds of problems.
Where do you see us going in the next 10 years?
I'm very optimistic, even though when I look at current events and the media and so forth, it can be very, you know, it's easy to be cynical and get cynical that we're not, that we're going backwards. But progress is being made. Things are changing. The next 10 years, I think, are going to see a opening. And Seth didn't talk about this 2012 event, but there are other sources that say that it's sort of a peak in galactic terms of galactic history of our path to separation and then return to include greater spirituality and understanding and awakening. But again, these are choices. It's not just going to happen. People have to wake up every day and realize that it's a violation to, say, own $4 billion worth of goods while there are starving people here or there, that their innate sense of violation guides them to make decisions to change that wealth distribution, which is a huge political issue, of course, that's raging right now. And, you know, when you look at history, we look at the, you know, royal families ruled. There was the concept that the kings and queens were gods, and their word was the law of God. Now, that has shifted during the modern era. But interestingly enough, we still have royalty with us today. Look at the royal wedding that just happened, and the royals are in Canada, and they're coming here to L.A. this week. And and they're very wealthy, but they're not politically as powerful any longer. So that is shifting, and it has shifted to the corporate structures that where the wealth is distributed right now. So that's sort of the new royalty, and that has to change as well. And we could just generally say it has to become greener, more energy efficient, more efficient in terms of wasting money and time, doing things, getting things done, innovation, those areas to improve things. There's, of course, technology, which is a double-edged sword. In itself, it's neutral. But with the internet and the cell phones and the telecommunication networks around the globe, where the news cycle is 24/7 now, newspapers, magazines, perhaps are obsolete, but they're not really, because it's fun to read them a day later yet still. And so on. But these technologies,
well, it's interesting, because when it comes to choice, I choose not to have my cell phone with me 24/7. I choose when I want to have it on and when I want to have it off, so I can be present in the moment and not at the beck and call of everybody trying to get me all at once. And that's a choice that I made. And if I pass up something and somebody can't get a hold of me, well, you know what? Then it wasn't meant to be. It just wasn't meant to be.
And I was just talking to a colleague the other day about the generation now growing up with cell phones as 8-year-olds, you know, 10-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
Texting and whatever. Yeah. That's going to play itself out when their children grow up in 10 years, 15 years down the road. They're going to rebel against that, and you may see another flower power movement back to nature, rediscovering the beauty of the natural world, which is very important.
Paul, I have loved having you on. You are a wealth of information. And for listeners, again, his website is www.paulhelm.com. Hel Fritch, Frick, helfrich.com. You can learn more about him and the events and workshops that he is going to be facilitating coming up in September. Paul, I wish you the best, and keep on doing what you're doing. It's very well worth it. I have more next week. This is Sally Felton with A Fresh Start.